Winter could be tough on your vehicle. Now's the perfect time to get your Chevy ready for that next road trip with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. When it comes to service, no one knows your Chevy better. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment.
Wow. Okay, let's see. Cubs have won the World Series, and Donald Trump is president. And I thought 2016 was going to be a boring year. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, I'm Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Episode 26. Wow, we've got some things to talk about today. Last time we talked, what a difference a week makes. Last time we talked, the Cubs were not World Series champs. And Donald Trump was not the president-elect. But within 7 days, I don't know about you, I think the theme song right now should be Carole King's I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet, because there has been a seismic shift.
God, you're telling me.
There's been a seismic shift, not only in our culture, but really in the world, because, and in the zeitgeist of the world here. I mean, for the Cubs to be actual World Series champs, at this point, I mean, since they've won it now, and we've come to accept it and embrace it and enjoy it, I don't know how you feel, but I almost feel like, well, yeah, it feels good. It feels right. And yet, let's be honest, it took 108 years to get there, and it took into the wee hours of the night, and it took into 10 innings to get there. So it wasn't as easy as it may have seemed or may seem now. And wow, Donald Trump has been consistently underestimated by almost everybody, whether it is the political media, the political structure, the political pundits, you name it. Every hurdle that has come in front of him, he was able to clear, and yet there was still doubt and still doubt about him. The media really missed this one. So many people missed this one. And I have to say that the only people that didn't miss this one are listeners of this podcast. If you are a regular listener to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, then this was not a surprise to you. Because all you have to do is go back to episode 24, just a couple of episodes away. It was posted on Halloween, October 31st. And go to the 54.23 mark, the 54-minute, 23-second mark. And I usually don't get into politics at all, even though I'm a big political junkie. I don't think it's – I don't want to make this into a political show, but I mean it was the presidential campaign. And we actually Kristen and I were talking about the presidential campaign as part of the Pop Culture Club segment, because it really became a part of pop culture. We had two huge personalities that were more celebrities in many ways than they were political candidates. And so within the realm of the Pop Culture Club, I thought, well, we should at least, you know, address the presidential campaign. And within that segment, I did make my prediction. And my prediction was, and you can hear it once again, just go to my landing page on WGNplus.com. It's up there in the entertainment section.
I have it pulled up if you want to hear it.
Oh, yeah? Okay, go ahead.
So now, here's my prediction. And see, I want to get your take on this. So here's my prediction. I think this is either going to be one of the biggest landslides in presidential history, where, I mean, by 9 o'clock at night, if the polls close here at 7, and I know that a lot of times they wait for the West Coast to vote. There's 2-hour difference. So they hold off about calling the election, so it's not, the people there get a chance to vote and get their voice heard. But at the same time, with technology and with this on-the-go society we live in, I mean, they can pretty much, they might not officially call it, but they certainly will see a trend happening, and especially if it's a landslide. So I would think by 7 or 8 o'clock, by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, there could be easily say, this is over, it's done. At least our projections show. Or option two.
Listen to option two now.
I don't think there's any in between here. I don't think this is going to be, this is either going to be a 70 to 30% or an 80 to 20% Hillary landslide. Or this is going to be a 49 to 48. We're up till 3 in the morning. And Trump wins by 2 or 3 electoral votes. I don't think there's anything in the middle.
Thank you very much. You didn't win by 2 or 3 electoral votes, but it was...
Good prediction. I mean,
it was,
we were up late.
It was 3 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast.
Yep.
And he did win about 49 to 48%. And the reason I made that prediction is, as I said later in this, is because I did feel that there were a lot of people, which they now have been saying, I felt that there were a lot of people that were not either willing to tell the truth as who they wanted to vote for, because it actually became, with all so much social media and the media pounding on it, it was almost kind of embarrassing to say you were for Trump. You would be branded, what are you, a racist? What are you, a bigot? What are you, a this? What are you, a that? And so I think a lot of people just sort of said what they wanted, that other people wanted to hear, but meanwhile, quietly, in their own minds, they knew they were going to vote for Trump. And when they got into that booth, they decided to vote for him. And I just felt that was happening, because throughout this entire campaign, as I said earlier, he was consistently underestimated from the first day he came down the escalator at Trump Tower in New York and announced his candidacy. So many of the established, political reporters were snickering and giggling and laughing and rolling their eyes and sighing and throughout the last, year and a half. And meanwhile, when you'd watch Donald Trump's different events, there were 50, 20, 30,000 people waiting in line for 5 or 6 hours to get in. Why, if you waited 5 hours to get in to see him, why wouldn't you wait 20 minutes to go vote for him? And that was my thinking on this. And I figured the landslide prediction for Hillary was, I wasn't a Trump supporter. I was just looking at the landscape and saying, here's what can happen, folks. So I'm not, you're a Trump guy. No, that's not what my point was. Let's look at the scenario and figure out what might happen. The reason I thought that Hillary would either win in a landslide or Trump would win in a nail biter was because Trump's comments and his behavior and his campaign were so off the wall, and the things he said and the stuff that came out with the groping and the other things and the stuff about Muslims and the stuff about all this stuff combined. There was either a major rejection of him. There was no question. You either hated this guy, and there was going to be a total rejection of him as to why she would have won in a landslide. However, if it wasn't a landslide, that means that regardless of how outrageous Trump was, he still had support. I mean, let's be honest. I was out of the country when this whole groping thing happened. And it was amazing because I was able to watch some TV of American channels. And, I mean, if you remember, people were thinking that Trump was going to drop out of the election because of this comment. And there was such anger, especially, and rightfully so, from women, that it looked like it was doomed. And they finally said, well, here's finally the thing. It's finally the one thing. He said bad things about McCain, and he said bad things about this and that. And it seemed to be kryptonite. But this one, the largest voting bloc in the country, and he found a way to incite them. And yet, 2 or 3 weeks later, this was still a 3-4 point election. It should, after that comment, if there was not support for him, it should have been off the charts. And it wasn't. It was actually closing. So all we can do now, and I mean, you know, we're recording this literally the day after. So Kristen was up all night here at WGN, working and blogging and doing social media as far as the story was breaking. Me, as being a political junkie that I am, I was up and I saw Donald Trump's speech at 2 a.m. at 2:30.
I did get a kick out of watching his poor little son on the side. Yeah, able to stay awake.
He was barely awake. I mean, I'm sitting there looking. It's so funny because I'm watching his son, Barron, who's probably a preteen or
10,
something.
Yeah,
10 or 11. And, I mean, I'm sitting there going, this kid doesn't even understand what happened.
He doesn't even know what's going on.
It's like think about it. Him and Melania are going to have to move into a smaller house now.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, they don't have to, I guess.
Well, no, but I'm just saying they're actually. You know, some people say, "Why you get to live it?" They're downsizing. They're going back. They're going down. They're going to move into the White House. And they're going to have less room and less
toilet.
Yeah, and less luxury. So I guess maybe that's why he's depressed.
Yeah.
You know, but you could just see he was kind of in a zone. I don't think it's really sunk in, and it's going to be interesting to see how that. You know, we've seen over the last several years. We've seen young people growing up in the White House. You've seen
like Trump is bucking every single trend that ever was.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing, but it's gonna be interesting to see him grow up there now because he's already come from privilege. He's been born, you know, this Barron has been born in privilege, and now he's going to grow up in the White House. And we've seen the Bush daughters, and we've seen obviously the Obama daughters, and we saw Chelsea, and they all grew up in the specter of the White House, and yet while they all came from privilege, to some extent, certainly the Bush daughters did, and Chelsea, I mean, you know, lived in, you know, was a political lived in the. I don't know if she was born. I'm sure she was born when he was governor of Arkansas. But anyway, to see this kid now probably come of age in the next 4 years, he may become a teenager. It'll be interesting to see how he changes because. Yesterday, I don't think he realized that your dad just became president.
Yeah.
He just sort of was standing there. But I'll be honest with you, that whole family there, they were all in shock. None of them, as much as you always put on a good face, I guarantee you that none of them expected that at 2 a.m. they'd be walking out and having a speech about welcome. We have just won the presidency. Take away, you know, whatever your thoughts are about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. What I enjoy most, and that's why I do this, is I'm a media junkie. That's why I love doing this. I love sharing this, love talking about it. And what I love is a good story. And my God, this is an amazing story. We are in history. Unfortunately for a lot of people, it may not be the history we thought we were going to be celebrating.
Right.
Meaning, and I mean, talk about the detail and the expectation that Hillary's organization had. Her headquarters for election night was at the Javits Center, which is a huge, it's like our McCormick place here in mm-hmm. Chicago. But the main reason that they had it at the Javits Center was because the Javits Center has a glass ceiling. And if you don't think that that glass ceiling was there for a metaphor about Hillary breaking the glass ceiling yesterday, potentially, then you're missing. There was so much orchestration there. They were there for that reason, and she was going to point to that glass ceiling, I guarantee you, and who knows if they would have broken it or something. But I mean, in terms of a story. If you take a step back from your personal feelings, one way or the other, this was history. This last week, as I said before, was historic in so many ways. Who knows what's going to happen? And especially for younger people, you know, you may not realize it because he has been deified so much now. But when Ronald Reagan first became president, he was viewed very much in the same way Donald Trump was. He was an actor who, even though he was governor twice in California, he was still viewed as kind of an outsider, kind of a lightweight. And obviously he made a lot of B movies and was not taken seriously at all as a president. And his first term, in fact, was he was not a popular president. There was a lot of nuclear war stuff. The economy was horrible during his first term. But we've seen what happened in terms of history and how he has been deified. So you really can't tell. The one good thing about America is we are resilient. And you know what? What, Trump will be the 45th president? We have had our share of horrible presidents. And yet here we are. So all we can do now as citizens of the United States is, yeah, you have to process this and digest this if you're a Hillary supporter, and you have to wonder, what is he going to do and how is he going to do it? But we also have to think about ourselves as a country. We have to root for him to do well, because we've seen in the last 10 or 15 years what the president decides and what he does have an impact on our country and the rest of the world. So we can only hope the best.
But also, it's comforting to know that our government was set up to have a system of checks and balances. So as well, in your stomach that you can have, that maybe this candidate was not the one you wanted, you know, it's not like he is a dictator.
No.
He's not a dictator.
So that's
comforting to know.
Right. The only point that must be pointed out, though, because I actually made part two prediction. I said whoever won, they were so polarizing and so viewed unfavorably. Both candidates were not well liked. I thought, and this still may happen, we'll see in 4 years, I said whoever wins is probably going to be a one-term president, because there's going to be such opposition to them. The Republicans don't like Hillary, so they would have used everything they could have to block her. And Donald Trump is such a wild card, you never know, and to your point about checks and balances. But here's the only difference, at least initially now, which nobody was expecting, and I didn't expect this either. Donald Trump has a Republican Senate and a Republican House of Representatives.
Yes.
So the checks and balances.
But the Republican Party as a whole didn't really like him as a candidate
No.
So I'm still hoping.
Oh, yeah. Well,
we'll
see. We'll see. Well, we'll see. Because if they don't, because you have to still respect the vote. And people voted. And so if there are some sitting Republicans who go against Trump after he now won, then they're going to have to explain to their constituency, well, why aren't you going along with the Republican president? And don't forget, with the Senate and the House, he will most likely name a conservative justice to fill the open space.
Yes.
And that will fly through, because he's got a Republican Senate. So now the makeup of the court will again tilt more conservatively, and the odds are in the next 4 years that one more, if not two more, justices may either resign. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has not been in good health for a long time, and I believe she was holding on in the hope that a Democrat would come in and then she would leave, and her seat would be filled by a more liberal-minded justice. Maybe she can hold on another 4 years. Who knows? But, you know, look at, no one expected Scalia to die in his sleep. So the only thing about the checks and balances, at least for the next 2 years before the midterm election, Donald Trump will have a lot of power that most presidents coming in don't have. And we've seen what don't forget, Barack Obama had that same kind of power. That's how Obamacare got passed at the beginning of his presidency. So this is going to be very interesting. If you know, this is something that, as I said, it's historic, and it's an incredible story, and we are living in it. And we have to digest it and make the best of it, and just hope that once again, America's resiliency gets us through this. If this turns out to be one of the worst experiments in the history of our country, but the fact
half of America can be like, ha ha. Well, yeah. We knew it.
But I mean, think about this. Donald Trump, he never even ran for library board. He never ran for anything. And he won not only his first time, but he won the biggest job in the world. And that's not even hyperbole. So that's just off the chart.
Welcome to America.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's never a dull moment in this country and in this world. Just when you think things are making sense, as I said, then the seismic shift happens. And so we'll see what happens. But as I said, at the very least, those of you loyal listeners to this podcast, I hope you realize that hopefully on a weekly basis, there amidst all the goofiness here, there's actually some kernels of truth. Because my goal is always to make you laugh, but also to make you think. And hopefully that's why you come back every week. So anyway, that's out there at the 54.23 mark of episode 24. I got that on the record. Now, here's another thing I got on the record, and holy smokes. Now, look, I am a Cub fan. And Chris, let me ask you this, because you deal in social media every day of your life. So, you know, we know how reactive social media can be.
Yes.
So, here's what I encountered, which I suspected to some extent, but didn't expect the onslaught that I got. Okay.
Okay.
Is it, in theory, I'll talk about the specifics, but first I want to say, so if like, for instance, here, I made this prediction about Trump, right? And I wanted to, once again, preface the fact that I wasn't a Trump supporter. I'm simply laying out a scenario.
Right.
So just because doesn't mean that I'm rooting for Trump. I'm just saying, here's what I see, and here's what might happen. So last week in Game 6 of the Cubs World Series, Joe Maddon brings in their ace reliever, Chapman, with a 5-run lead. And he had just thrown 43 pitches two nights before. And you have a 5-run lead with 7 outs to go. You have a chance to rest this guy because you still have a 5-run lead in this game. And he brought him in. And yes, they won the game. But I can't believe that you don't have a bullpen that could have gotten held a 5-run lead. And saved your ace reliever now for Game 7 when you're going to need him. Because we all knew that that game was going to be a tough game. So I simply said, with, hey, a little, you know, Elton Jim hyperbole as well. I'm not adverse to hyperbole. I said, I actually think that Joe Maddon, on my Facebook page, I said, I think Joe Maddon made one of the worst managerial choices in the history of the Cubs team by putting Chapman in. And I was flooded with people, oh, they had to win it. And I said, hey, but it's 5-run lead. Oh, don't worry. They'll be fine. Chapman will be fine. Blah, 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 blah. And I said, and then I said here, I only hope, and I hope I'm wrong, and I'll have to go back to last week's and find out where I said this. And I said, I hope I'm wrong, but I hope to God the game does not get into the 8th or 9th inning and it's close, because I don't think Chapman is going to have his stuff because he's going to be worn out.
I remember seeing that.
And what happened in the 8th inning? Who gave up the tying 2-run homer in the 8th inning? So I'm sitting there screaming at the television, swearing at the television. I'm not happy that I was right. But once again, I wasn't rooting against the Cubs. I wasn't hoping this would happen. I was looking at this from an objective standpoint to say, hey, Cub fans, Joe Maddon just put us in a vulnerable spot. I hope I'm wrong, but he didn't need to use Chapman in Game 6. He could have rested him and gotten him ready for Game 7 and used another pitcher to hold a 7-run lead. If your bullpen can't hold a 5- and 7-run lead with 7 outs to go, you don't deserve to win. So so the mere mention of this branded me as a Judas.
Oh, yeah.
And a traitor.
Why try and ruin our mojo?
Well, yeah, but
even putting it out there.
But
putting it out there.
No,
in the universe,
no, there's no mojo. No, no, no.
Mojo.
No, there is no mojo.
Yes, there
no,
is.
No, no, because what we've learned now is that when you saw that Cub team held their ground, came back and won it in the 10th when other Cub teams would have collapsed, what we finally have learned was that, as I've been saying this all season, this Cub team is not your grandfather's Cub team. It's actually a good team. And what we've learned now is that it wasn't about goats. It wasn't about Bartman. What it was about for the last 108 years is that the Cubs had ownership that was not committed to win. They were committed to make money, and they were committed to be just good enough to keep the people coming in. And when you finally had an owner who wasn't looking at balance sheets, but was looking at how am I going to win a World Series, he paid $150 million to John Lester, $185 million to Jason Hayward, who I've got more hits than he does. That's putting your money where your mouth was. That is something that the Cubs have never had. Owners that were really committed. So I understand everybody is, you know, Cub fans. I hope now that they won this, that we can shed that nail biting and that wringing of the hands after every pitch. These guys are good, man. We got
a
good,
you know,
team.
Even though we won the World Series, 108 years is such a long time.
I understand that.
Ingrained in you that I don't think one winning World
Series
team.
I hope so, because
we'll just shed that.
Well, so here's the thing. So
it takes away kind of the fun of being a Cubs fan.
No. Well, the point there is, it's going to be different now to be a Cub fan, because you can't. There's the lovable loser thing is gone. The Cubs are now a target. The Cubs are now the target for every other team in baseball to be as good as the Cubs and to beat the Cubs. And that's never been a reality for over a century. So Cub fans are going to have to now understand that you've got a good team. We should expect to win next year. We should demand excellence. We shouldn't just, I hope they're good. Right now, the way I look at it, if the Cubs don't make the World Series next year, the season is a flop. That's the way you have to start to look at this team. That's the way the New England Patriots fans think about it. That's the way the New York Yankees thinks about it. Fans think about it. They don't think about, geez, I hope we're good this year. We're winning the whole thing. That's the way they think. And Chicago now, we're winners. The Cubs are winners. So we need the Blackhawks fans. Don't Blackhawk fans now expect the Hawks to win the cup?
Yeah.
There's no, I hope they make
one
the playoffs.
One goal, baby.
Yeah.
One goal.
One goal. They don't think, well, geez, I hope the Hawks make the playoffs. There's no playoffs. Of course we're making the playoffs. We got to win the cup again. That's how Cub fans have to think. So, first of all, when the 2-run homer comes, I was sitting there. As I said, I am a diehard Cub fan. I have been since I can remember. I'm not rooting against the Cubs. I wasn't hoping that they tied up the score in the 8th inning. But I saw that the potential for that was there, because this guy was going to be overworked. And I'm just saying this from somebody who has watched a ton of baseball games. And I played a ton of baseball games. And I used to be a catcher. And I could tell by 2 pitches. If my pitcher in that game was going to be good or bad that day, I could tell right away. I could tell by the way the ball was coming in. I could tell by his face. And I knew that other guy, that Chapman, had pitched way too much. He's used to pitching 3 or 4 pitches a game, not 43, not 64. So anyway, I certainly didn't want to gloat, but I was so mad that my prediction happened, because it was so obvious and it didn't have to happen. He put the Cubs in a vulnerable spot for no reason. He could have used another reliever in game six. So I just went on Facebook and wrote, huh, who could have predicted this? Question mark. Oh, my God. The heavens exploded. How dare you pat yourself on the back? You are not a Cub fan. Blah, 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 blah. Holy cow. There was over 200 comments.
Not surprised.
So then here's the best part. So now, okay, all is forgiven. Madden in game seven managed a horrible game. He should have never taken Lester out. I mean, he never should have taken Hendricks out that early. He never should have brought Lester in the middle of an inning. And suddenly a 5-1 coasting lead became 5-3. And everything got very scary. He overmanaged. He managed from fear, which was very disappointing, because all season and through his tenure here in Chicago, he's never managed from fear. He's always been confident. But he got freaked out too. For a second there, he believed the GOAT curse, and it almost did him in. Except that the Cub players didn't give two craps about the GOAT curse, and they were able to overcome his bad decisions. So here we are, Cubs win. And so now we have the rally. Did you go to the rally?
Yeah, I was in the front row.
Were you?
I was in the photo pit.
Really?
I really was in the front
row.
Yeah,
okay, great. So this is perfect. So now I'm watching this on television, and people are getting there at 4 a.m, and everybody's lining up, and they're at Wrigley, and they're along the streets and the buses, and everybody's getting down to the thing. And it's an amazing picture. And if you were there, I mean, it might be difficult because you couldn't really, I don't know if you were able to see those overhead shots.
Yeah, they had a WGN on the Jumbotron.
Okay, so it was an amazing event. It was a sea of blue, and it was just an outpouring of support and loyalty and love for the Cubs. It was a sight to see, and I'm sure being there, it had to have been unbelievable.
It was.
Yeah. And I'm sure that will be a memory that you will have for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And how great that is. And even as me watching it at home, I'm saying, wow, how cool is this? This is awesome. Not only did the Cubs win, but my gosh, this has been a huge, a thing on Cub fans' back. This huge weight, and they're showing their appreciation and their love for the Cubs after so long and so many generations and all these games. You saw grandpas and grandmas and great-great-grandmas and this whole thing.
But I'm waiting.
But because if there's an Elton Jim,
rain on our parade.
Well, and this is what I got accused of again. All I'm doing is pointing things out. I'm not against anything.
Uh-huh.
I'm pointing things out. So the next day, what are we seeing? Cubs rally draws 5 million people. There were not 5 million people in Grant Park. There were not 5 people on the streets combined. That is almost double the entire population of the city. We're at about 2.7. Twice the population was not there. But Chicago, and then you're hearing these ridiculous things that it was the 7th biggest collection of people in human history.
Why makes you...
There were not 5 million people there. And I'll tell you why. Because Chicago historically loves to overinflate crowds in order to make itself look good. I love this city. Once again, I'm a fan. I've lived here my whole life, born and raised here.
But we're not talking about 5 million people just in
I
Grand
don't
Park.
Care. I we're don't about- No. No. There is no way combined there were 5 million people. There weren't. You know how many 5 million people are? The city couldn't have moved if 5 million people converged on all those areas. It's impossible. But we had to say 5 million because, well, the Blackhawks had 2 million. And this has to be the biggest party on earth. And we have to show the world how Cub fans have the greatest parties on earth. We had the greatest party on earth. You were there. That was an amazing, amazing event. But why do we have to booster this thing? So I saw this. I said, there's no way there's 5 million. So right away, the next day in the paper, there's all the pictures, blah, 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 boo, 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 boo. And then there's this little story at the bottom of the page that says, Cub estimates may be vastly exaggerated. The Tribune felt the obligation to put that in because it was facts. And
but
that's
why ruin our great story?
There's no ruin. You had a great story. You had an amazing parade. You know what that reminded me of? When I was in
my
20s.
We want to be the most.
No, don't. No, because that's loser. That's, once again, that's second city chip on the shoulder. You don't need to do that. Embrace the fact. You know what? If the Cubs had one, let's say they said 1 million people were there. Wrigley Field has a capacity of 40,000 people. If only 1 million people showed up to that, that would be 25 times the capacity of Wrigley Field. Isn't that impressive?
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. So we had to say 5 million, which is completely off the... Anybody who's from other cities and anybody that does crowd estimates all laughed at Chicago by saying, well, here they go again. You know why Chicago is called the Windy City? It has nothing to do with the wind off the lake. It's because in the 1800s or 1900s, politicians called Chicago politicians full of hot air and windy because they always bragged. We don't have to do that anymore. We're a great city. Why open yourself up to ridicule when you could just say, look at this amazing crowd and this amazing love for this team? So here's the thing. Now, I write, no way, 5 million people. Oh, my gosh. I am pummeled. So a couple days later, someone writes in the Tribune editorial, no way 5 million people there. I said, hey, look, I'm not the only one. I went back and found a story from the Tribune from 1979. So this is not, I'm not just spouting my own silly thoughts here. Chicago has a history of this. In 1979, Pope John Paul II came to Chicago and had a mass at Grant Park. And Chicago, of course, has one of the biggest Polish populations, very, very Catholic city. And he went through different cities throughout the country and did these outdoor masses, New York, Boston, Philadelphia. They estimated the crowd to see Pope John Paul in Grant Park at 1.5 million. At the time, the headline said the biggest event in Chicago history, if not the country. About a week later, another story appeared in the Tribune. A crowd estimator, an expert, looked at the photos and said, maybe 100,000. Maybe. Maybe 100,000. We said 1.5 million. Chicago, you don't need to have this insecurity. That was an amazing event. We came out. The thing that it reminded me of, and tell me if this ever happened to you, when you were in your 20s, there was a cool party that you didn't go to, right? And your friends told you, oh my God, you missed the greatest party on earth because this happened, and oh my God, you didn't get... Okay, fine. Then you go to the next party, and you're there now. And another friend of yours isn't. And now you hear, and you're at this party, and you hear how great this party was, and they're telling that person who wasn't there, and you say to yourself, well, I don't know, I was at that party. What was so great about it? It was that you weren't there, and we were. We're throwing the Cubs party. It has to be the greatest on earth, or it doesn't count. So here's my question. What if the Cubs do win next year? Does the party have to be 6 million? Because now next year's party has to be better than last year's.
Sure.
And then people say to me, well, who cares how many people were there? Get off of it. Who cares? Like you just said, don't rain on our parade. Well, then why don't we say 10 million people were there? We're throwing
well,
the...
Well, now that's a little...
Oh, that's... Oh, yeah. Yeah, 10 million's ridiculous, but 5 is not. See,
I don't think 5 million is that ridiculous.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? What I've learned is when it comes to the Cubs now, at least for the next 5 years...
Keep your mouth shut.
I'm not saying anything because clearly Cub fans... You can't say a thing about, if you say a word about the Cubs in a negative way, you are a Judas. And Cub fans have to feel good about this, and maybe it's 108 years. So I guess facts be damned. Those of us who actually think that factual reality is important, we'll just have to keep our mouths shut because the delusional daydreamers don't want to hear. And they don't want me to be the pin in their balloon. I don't understand why they had to be. We had to have that. That was an amazing event. That should be enough. But Cub fans, they need to have the greatest party in the world. So you know what? Congratulations. But I think there were 10 million people there. I think you Cub fans underestimated it. I think there were 10 million people there. Congratulations, Cub fans. Whoa. Well, yes, the bitch is back. Yes, I am.
Totally appropriate. Did that on purpose.
Yeah. Sometimes even the mistakes work out well. Yes, so the bitch is back. And we are back here.
Sorry about that.
No problem. It's that's like I said. The charm of an Elton Jim show is the mistakes. If it went well, then it's just like every other show. That's my charm. So anyway, last week, we had a little pop culture club segment. We were talking, and I wanted to talk about this list that was in Rolling Stone about the greatest TV shows of all time, but we got so caught up on music in general and about the old Cella event that and possible names for that we just ran through the whole thing. So... once again, we've got Emily Arminetti to help us out in the Pop Culture Club. Are you there, Emily?
I am.
So how do you feel about my Cubs rant?
Oh, boy. Don't drag me into this.
Come on, Emily.
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you this, though, Jim. Okay. You are going to go from Elton Jim to Judas Jim.
Yeah.
You probably need to drop it.
Love
said
it.
Your piece.
Love it.
I am but, such a, I, you know, what kills me is I'm a huge Cub fan. I love the Cubs. I want them to win. And I'm a huge fan of Chicago. And I want Chicago to be the best city in the world. And the only way that's going to happen is if you don't always have to worry about we did the best of this and we had the best pizza and New York sucks and all that stuff. Be yourself. Just embrace yourself. And let the world recognize how good you are. That's all I'm saying. There's no way there were 5 million people there. Sorry.
Well, what is a crowd estimator anyway? Is that like a job? How does anyone know? Like, how do you look at a crowd and go,
well, based on the estimates
that's 3 million, that's 5 million.
Well, based on the estimates that come out of Chicago, I think it's some guy's cousin. That's the guy who got a job.
It's that guy over there.
It's over that guy. Hey, my cousin Nikki could be the official city estimator.
They have these little clickers. And they
yeah.
The official crowd counter.
Yeah, this is my cousin Nikki over here. He's over by the south side. He's going to be the official crowd estimator. Okay, Nikki? Hey, it looks about 5 million to me. All right, put it down.
5 million? Okay.
What do you want? Well, we had the Blackhawks came in at 2 million. 2 million? Well, geez, we got to have at least double that. 4 ain't a fun number. Let's say 5. Okay, 5? Yeah, we'll give him 5. Call the mayor. Tell him 5. That's what it was.
All right. Just let it be known. I warned you, okay? You can't drop it. I told you.
Because, like I said, I was getting, because even with this Trump thing, you know, I don't know if I told you, but I predicted.
Oh God.
I predicted Trump would win at 3 in the morning in a nail biter.
Yeah.
How dare you? You're a Trump guy. You're ruining our country. I'm like, no, I'm just saying the possibilities here. I am your friendly, objective reporter here to give you scenarios for you to think about. That's all. I tried to be as objective. I'm not giving you my personal views. I'm just saying I'm observing this, and here's what I think might happen. All I know is if I was on MSNBC yesterday, today I would probably be a millionaire because I was the only guy that called it. Everybody else was like, well, you know, there is still a way for Hillary to win. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is over. Stop it. I'm not happy it's over, but it's over.
Anyway. That's right. Okay. They're both over. The World Series is over. Right. The election is over.
All right, so now we're going to debate on these 100 damn TV shows.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what you're going to point out about these.
So here's what's wrong with this list.
Right.
Let's hear it. Let's hear what else you're writing on. Yeah.
Well, see, that's why everybody looks at me like, oh, you're such a downer. No, I'm not a downer. I just deal in facts. That's all. Somebody has to be factual around here. Oh, boy. All right. So, Emily.
Yes.
As I said to you last week, so about a month ago in Rolling Stone, their cover story was the 100 greatest TV shows of all time. Yeah. Every list is always made to be debated. So we know there's going to be problems. So I asked you to take look. I asked you to take a look at this list. Overall, what did you think of that list?
Okay. I mean, look, there are 100 spots on it. So they're going to do some things right. Right. But overall, I think the list is decent. I think there are some really glaring omissions, though. And I definitely think there's something a little bit off about the order here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think there are things that were ranked way too high. There were things that were ranked way too low.
I totally agree with you. I mean, the number one show was The Sopranos. And I'm not surprised by that. And as I said to you, actually, I was on a plane about a month or so ago and on a long flight internationally, and I was able to watch season one of The Sopranos, and I forgot how great that show is. So I have no problem with number one. Do you have a problem with The Sopranos being number one?
I don't have a problem with The Sopranos being number one. I mean, if you had said to me, take a wild guess, what's the number one show on the list? I don't know that I necessarily would have picked The Sopranos, but yes, looking at the list, it makes sense. I think the biggest thing about The Sopranos is that it did change television. You know, it was when it came along, it was really unlike anything else that we had ever seen. And I think it created a template for some of the really great groundbreaking shows that we are seeing on the small screen.
Oh, there's no question about that.
You know, thinking about all of that, I think it makes perfect sense that The Sopranos would be number one.
Well, I thought you would say that Charles in Charge should be number one.
No, I mean, Beverly Hills 90210.
So just really quickly. So number one is Sopranos, two is The Wire, three was Breaking Bad, four was Mad Men, five was Seinfeld, six was The Simpsons, seven was The Twilight Zone, eight was Saturday Night Live, nine was All in the Family, and 10 was The Daily Show. And we go on. Now, I'll tell you, I have a lot of problems to your point. I have a lot of problems with even that first top 10, and I have a lot of problems with the placing of different shows even within that top 10. But I went through this list, and I've got at least 25 shows that should have been on that list. So in my view, a quarter of this list is not even right.
Yeah, it's wrong.
Yeah. So if you had to, what do you think was the most glaring omission?
I'm probably going to get into it. I didn't have as many omissions as you have, but I'll actually give you my top three because I feel like my most glaring needs a little bit of context.
Okay, good.
So number two and three most glaring I thought were Frasier,
right,
and Murphy Brown.
Oh, Murphy Brown.
Two great shows.
Wow, I forgot. Well, now I have 26.
Acclaimed, very highly rated, award-winning shows, and they are nowhere to be found on this list.
I totally. Frasier, it almost illegitimizes the list. Frasier won the Emmy Award, I think, 5 years in a row. It is a great, it's a well-written show. It's a funny show. It was never a critic's favorite.
Frasier won Emmy Awards. They won Golden Globe Awards. They won SAG Awards. Yeah. I actually went back to look and read, like, to find out how they came to this list, because I was so shocked that Frasier wasn't on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was...
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say though what I read in kind of the preamble to the list is that this is all the result of a poll of they call it a major poll. I don't know what that means. They don't really give us numbers, but okay, let's say it was 5 million people were polled. 5 million people in Hollywood. That's the crowd control estimate.
I think it was at least 5 million. It was at least 5 million.
It's major. It's major. So anyway, but this is the result of a poll of actors, writers, producers, critics, showrunners. So from that perspective, you would expect to see shows that are being recognized at the Emmys, at the SAGs, at the Golden Globes. You know, you would expect to see them on this list. Well, now, those were my kind of two and three.
Right.
I have to say, I think the most glaring, and I feel like this might be a little bit controversial, has got to be The Cosby Show.
Oh, really?
Cosby
was not on there, and that was a groundbreaking show for its time in the 80s, even though Bill Cosby now obviously has got some pretty major image problems. But you cannot deny the impact and influence and popularity of that show, and that's a really good point. And I do have that on my list.
But I really thought that was the most glaring, and I get it. I understand. We are disgusted by Bill Cosby. This is obviously a function of his very spectacular fall from grace, right? He's facing assault charges. That certainly changes how we view him and his legacy. But to totally erase this show from history, I mean, as you said, it was groundbreaking. It was a cultural touchstone.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. Yeah, that's
real. I mean, do you remember anyone who was living in the 80s watched this show?
Yeah, no, and not only that, but it was an important show from a standpoint of diversity in that showing a black, most up to that point, the biggest shows that featured African-American families were like Good Times, Sanford and Son. Now, yes, the Jeffersons were one of the ones where, it was actually an affluent family. But they also came from the ghetto and made their way up. That's where the song comes from, Moving On Up.
I also think that, Bill Cosby aside, there was an entire ensemble of cast and crew who worked on that show for nearly a decade, And so this has kind of marred the whole legacy of the show. And, for some of those people, probably not crew members necessarily, but at least cast members, for some of those people, this was like, their most influential work.
Yeah. What else is Theo going to do?
Well, he was in The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, I know he was. Yeah, he was the guy who drove the Bronco.
Right, but that doesn't even compare to,
Well, I agree with you. I had Cosby on my list of 20, now 26. I got to say, excellent call on Murphy Brown. That was not on my list, and it should have been, and good call on that. Now, here's one that I'm sure that was not on your list, but I'm probably showing my age, but also, once again, regardless, you have to give credit where credit's due, regardless of the show is from the 1950s or from the 2016. And I have to say one thing about this list. I was impressed in this list that there were shows because, this is Rolling Stone and they're trying to, talk to millennials and younger people. So I figured it was going to be totally skewed to newer shows. And to its credit, this list did have shows like I Love Lucy and The Honeymooners, which is my favorite show, I'm just talking about shows from the 50s, like your show of shows.
Oh, okay.
So there were some shows from the 50s that were on there, and that I thought would have easily be forgotten, because what's funny is in your mind, a show from the 80s is considered an old show.
You say that, but I think you'll be surprised because I think I know what show you're going to say.
What show am I going to say?
I'm right, they're on my list. I think you're going to say Leave It to Beaver.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
No.
I'm going to say
that. One more guess.
I'm going to go again. One more.
The Patty Duke Show.
No. Oh. It's a great song. Here's Kathy, who's lived most everywhere from Zanzibar.
That was a great show.
No, here it is. I'll just give you the theme.
Oh yeah, is that
Andy Griffith?
I don't know.
What was that? Yes, it's Andy Griffith. Hello. You know, I'm gonna have to review of your application for the Pop Culture Club. Oh, was that Andy Griffith? Barney Fife. Don Knotts was on the show for the first 5 years. Every year he won Best Supporting Actor. Every year. He was sort of like Frasier, like Niles. Niles won Best Supporting Actor on Frasier. In fact, the funny thing is that if not for Niles and Frasier, you know, Jason Alexander never won for George Costanza on Seinfeld.
I didn't realize.
He never won because David Hyde Pierce always won on Frasier. But yeah, I would have to say,
so
I mean, Andy Griffith's show has not been off the air since it was on, since it debuted in 1960. So for the Andy Griffith show not to be on there, to me, that's a flaw, as well as Frasier. And I have to just mention, now, do you have it? Now, you did mention, and I give you credit for this one, you did mention Beverly Hills 90210, right? No, seriously.
The Niner.
I mean,
that was a huge, to your point.
That was a huge touchstone kind of show because it was one of the first shows that really accented the young generation and sort of changed, you know, just like Friends was kind of playing to the young Gen Xers at that time. Beverly Hills 90210 was also one of the first network shows, and it was on Fox above all, to highlight, you know, a young cast and show that they could really, you know, carry a show. So yeah, I wouldn't agree with you in terms of that because I never watched the show. It was a little past my prime, but in terms of what it did mean, it's not a bad addition to the list.
Yeah, I mean, it was fairly wholesome. You know, it was still an Aaron Spelling show, but you know, there was always a lesson to be learned in every episode. You know, and it was delivered in a way that I think teenagers at that time could, you know, receive it. And it, yeah, I mean, look, the Niner is for me.
The fact that you call it the Niner,
it will always have a special place in my heart. I'm not surprised that it's not on your list.
Right, exactly.
Oh, but I think you know me well enough to know that it is on my list.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But what did surprise me, I'll just give a couple of quickies here of ones that I think definitely should have been on there. Whether you like it or not, or you think it's an entertainment show or not, 60 Minutes deserves to be on there. It was number one show for a good 10 years. And 60 Minutes did change the way that journalism was shown on primetime television. So I really think that 60 Minutes should have been on there. I'm surprised that a show like The Carol Burnett Show wasn't on there. And I'm also surprised, even though it's schlocky, you can argue this, how come the Brady Bunch isn't on there?
I mean, it's
a cornball show, but it's been on for 40, it has never left television. There has to be something to be said for that. Everybody knows Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. I mean, it's a part of the pop culture. I know it wasn't highbrow entertainment, but longevity and entering and being a foundation of the pop culture, I think should count. It wasn't a great show. It was corny as hell. But 50 years later, we're still 45 years later, we're still talking about it. We're still watching it.
Yep. Yep.
So, and I'll tell you, a more recent show that I really came—I didn't catch it when it started. I was slow to the party on this. Did you like Park and Recreation? Parks and Recreation.
You know, I never really watched it. I mean, I love Amy Poehler. I love some of the other you know, comedians that were on that show. Aziz Ansari is one of my favorites, but I never really watched it. I can't explain
you
why.
You should check it out.
Maybe it might have started when I wasn't back here yet. I don't know, but.
And
yeah,
I definitely will. And I also have to say,
I mean, Jim, by the way, you know, if you have Netflix, you can get caught up on any of these shows that you have not.
I don't have Netflix.
You're late to the party.
My television is not smart. It's learning disabled. Oh. I don't have a smart set. I have a learning disabled set.
We're going to start tutoring it. We're going to get it up to speed.
Now, here's a very quick thing. I thought I liked the show Freaks and Geeks. But it shouldn't have been number 11.
I mean, that show, I didn't watch it, but I know that people loved it. I'm sure it was very funny. I think this was Judd Apatow, right?
Yeah.
Earlier in his career. And, you know, people like Lizzie Kaplan and there are a few other people.
Oh, yeah, Seth Rogen and James Franco.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah.
Obviously, they've really emerged as, you know, some very talented.
But not number 11.
But.
Not number 11.
Number 11. No. I mean, and there, well, yeah. I mean, especially when you look further down the list and you see, I mean, is Freaks and Geeks, was it better than Taxi?
Well, here's another thing.
No.
Now you tell me, because I haven't even heard of this show. Number 88 is a show called Party Down.
Right.
Did you ever hear of it?
It was also Lizzie Kaplan.
Did you ever hear of it?
I've read about it, and I think, once again, it's very similar, I think, to Freaks and Geeks. It was good, people liked it, but it didn't really get a following, and it only lasted for one season.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about Freaks and Geeks. It only lasted for 12 episodes.
Oh, I know!
I think it's just crazy.
Yeah.
It may have been phenomenal, but I think that right there, it disqualifies you from being anywhere near the top 10.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, like I said, I was impressed that that they did. I thought there were several shows. How do you feel about My So-Called Life?
I liked My So-Called Life. I think that show. Well, I mean,
because that was on there,
and that probably had more substance than 90210. So that was once again dealing with, you know, a certain demographic. It was kind of targeting teens, but dealing with real issues that teens were dealing with. So I think it deserves to be on the list.
Well, I can't believe that Portlandia was on the list, even though it was at 97. I understand it's a hipster
people
show.
People love that show.
I know it's a hipster
show,
but it's not one of the greatest TV shows of all time.
I agree.
Not when Frasier isn't on there. Not when Andy Griffith isn't on there. Not when Murphy Brown. I'll give you some other ones. SCTV, not on there. Family Guy, not on there. The Flintstones, on there.
How about shows like Family Ties, Designing Women?
Exactly.
Night Court.
What about...
And even, like I said, you know, Leave It to Beaver, the Patty Duke show.
Elsewhere.
You know, people...
Saint Elsewhere.
Right, Saint Elsewhere.
Saint Elsewhere, not on there. Pee-wee's Playhouse. Not on there.
That might have been a long shot, though.
Well, I don't know. But here's another
Modern
one.
Modern Family. Yeah, I didn't even know.
Modern Family, not on there. Survivor. The granddad.
Come on. Survivor, no way. I was on the fence even about The Real World, although I think.
No, The Real World deserved to be on there.
Started.
No, The Real World.
It did.
Yeah.
Well, maybe like seasons 1 through 4. After that.
Yeah, well, no. Right, exactly.
You know.
But
it was the same old thing. But,
you know, and there was a show in this.
You know, also like Picket Fences, Third Rock from the Sun, Quantum Leap. I mean, these were like, you know, all really high quality shows. And then I feel like I look at this list and there are some shows that I'm like, what? I mean,
well, you know what's so funny, though? It's so funny because we're probably about 10 years different in age. And it's so funny how all the ones that you're mentioning are like from the 80s when you were like a teenager or, you know, in your mid to late teens. And then a lot of the ones that I'm talking about were all from like the mid 70s to early 80s when I was. Because I would say, that once again, like say Barney Miller or The Waltons or Sanford and Son or Moonlighting. Moonlighting was a great show.
Moonlighting. That was,
Yeah, with Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis. Another great show. But I'm saying, talking about, you know, I mean, I have to tell you, when I was a little kid, and I wasn't all that old at the time, but still, it's unheard of now when you think about it. On Saturday night, on CBS, you put on CBS at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, and you never changed the channel. On CBS on Saturday nights in the mid-70s, you had
the lineup?
All in the Family at 7, The Jeffersons at 7:30, Mary Tyler Moore at 8, Bob Newhart at 8:30, and Carol Burnett at 9 to 10. You didn't change the station.
That was like the must-see TV.
You did not change the station. And the funny thing is that every one of those shows, except the Carol Burnett show, is on this list. And that surprised me because Carol Burnett was a trailblazer. The fact that this was a female entertainer at that time in the late 60s into the early 70s who had her name on a show. That was unheard of at that time. And she was a trailblazer for not only women at the time, but also then the people that came off of that show, like Tim Conway and Harvey Korman. So that one surprises me just because, you know, Carol Burnett is in her 80s now, and she's still around, and she's still performing to some extent, and I thought that they would have given her a nod just because of the groundbreaking impact that show had.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in today's kind of culture where we are very, zeroed in on female empowerment and stuff. And I would have thought, so that one did surprise me. But I have to say,
well, now that you raised that one, it makes me really sad that Beavis and Butthead is on this list.
Well, I'll tell you, I have to say that if I had to say one thing, I was very impressed with your call on Murphy Brown, and I'm very disappointed in myself for not picking that one out. That was really a good show. That was really a good show.
You didn't predict that one.
No. But let me tell you, at the 54...
You win some, you lose some.
At the 54.24 mark of the October 31st podcast, I predicted Trump would win.
Oh, no.
So, yes, that sound you hear is my hand patting myself on the back. Well, I'll tell you, like I said, every list is made to be debated, and we could probably go on forever on this. But I like your additions, and I like your the Murphy Brown pick. I got to say, as impressed as I was with all of my picks, which is a surprise that I would be impressed by my own picks.
Well, yeah, you're always impressed with your own picks.
I got to say, I think you hit a knockout punch on Murphy Brown.
I like to earn my keep in the pop culture club.
Yeah, I mean, I have to question.
I take this very seriously.
Well, I know that, but at the same time, I once again have to question your validity when I whistle the Andy Griffith theme and you say, oh, was that Andy Griffith?
Well, I knew the answer, didn't I?
All right, so get on Netflix and start watching Andy Griffith.
Oh, I'm going to knock myself out on Netflix with old episodes of Andy Griffith. I'll be walking around whistling the theme song.
All right, Emily, thanks a lot for another fun pop culture club. Take care.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, that was an eventful podcast, number 26. I hope you had a good time. I did. I ain't here in business. I'm only here for fun. And fun we had, but I'm also here to make you think, too. So hopefully you did both. So thanks a lot. Every Monday, a new episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. It is the one podcast that goes from the end of the web to your screen.